copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This is a focal talk on organization. And actually, this is one of the biggest issues that we deal with within our organization. We serve a variety of nonprofits all over the world. We give them the instruction that they need in order to be able to grow an organization. And oftentimes, you know, in the midst of all of that, they begin to become overwhelmed. I teach my network here at the Forum, and usually after the first day or so, people are saying, okay, I came in with a lot to do and you just gave me a whole lot more. So how in the world do you think I'm going to be able to do all of this because I'm a one-man show? In other words, they're the only person in the organization that is doing the work of development. And so the answer to the question is it's got to be done through better organization, because you can't do everything by yourself and you shouldn't do everything by yourself. By doing something that somebody else can do, you're robbing them the opportunity of being a part of what it is that you're doing, and you don't want to do that. And so how do you organize? And that really does become the challenge of what it is that we need to do in terms of getting things done. So let's talk about the fact that organization, it's the biggest challenge you're going to face in working with a church, with working with your nonprofit, if you're working with something that's outside the church, but yet serving God and making a difference and meeting the needs of others. The realities are you've got some incredible challenges because you know there's so much to do, but there's so little number of people, essentially, that might be available. You can't afford to hire people, which is oftentimes the case. You know, you can't hire. And sometimes I think we use hiring as being, you know, if we hire somebody, then we don't have to worry anymore because that person's going to do it. We can kind of wash our hands like in Pilate's basin, you know, and say, okay, we're out of this now. You're responsible for it. But that person is going to be equally as frustrated as perhaps you are because of the lack of resources that he or she might have in doing what it is that needs to be done. So the answer to the question, you know, ultimately is, and I think most of us know that, is to seek to engage volunteers. Now, there's a lot of reasons why volunteers are valuable to you. When they do something, they're taking a little bit of ownership in what it is that your organization is all about. They have something that they've contributed. It may be just their sweat and blood, not necessarily any money, but they have a part of what it is that you are, and basically that's a good thing. You want people that own the mission in much the same way that you do. There are some things that keep people from accepting invitations to become involved. And that is, one of them is that you don't tell them precisely what you're asking them to do. You know, we're so anxious to get people to say yes that we're willing to kind of lower the bar as low as we need to be in order for someone to be able to say yes to an appeal that you have. And then when they say yes, oftentimes we walk away and say, well, thanks, and I'm really glad that you're going to be doing this. And the person's kind of waving his hands in anxiety and saying, you know, I don't know how to do it. I've never done anything like you're asking me to do. And you just shrug your shoulders and say, oh, yeah, you can do it. You've really done a lot of things like this in the past. And maybe the person's a perfectionist, and perfectionists are the hardest people to work with only because they never perceive or they never achieve a perfection. Nothing is ever exactly as good as it could be, and so going to a perfectionist and not giving them direction is really a form of suicide, I think, in the world of development. You don't set time limits for their involvement. That's another reason why people don't become engaged, because they're afraid that you're going to take so much of their time that they're never going to be able to, you know, get out of the commitment that, you know, you've asked them to make. And so obviously the best way to get donors is to tell them exactly what you want them to do, tell them when something is going to begin, when it's going to end, and what will happen in between. In other words, you have time frames that you honor, and you don't ask them to do oftentimes more than two or three things at one time. You know, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is obviously one bite at a time. We all can eat an elephant. And it seems like a lot of the things that we need to do within our organization seem like that elephant, don't they? That it's just so big. How in the world are we ever going to be able to tackle some of the challenges that we have? So let's talk about how we eat an elephant. Things that you do that must be organized. In other words, you're going to be involved in doing a lot of things within your organization, and they all need to be organized. And you can't underestimate the importance and underemphasize the importance of organization. In talking to our clients, we put most of the activities that are involved in the world of development into four broad categories. You know, the first one is projects. In other words, these are short-term things that we do within an organization. It may be that, you know, we need to raise money for something that was not necessarily anticipated. Let's say there's a storm that comes over, and when the storm comes over, it blows off some of the shingles on your roof and you need to get it repaired. And so you didn't put that in the budget because you didn't expect that to happen, but you still need to get the roof repaired or you're not going to be able to continue to do the work that you've been called of God to do. And so in that particular example, you have a project. It's something that's short in duration. That's the primary definition of a project. It's short in duration. And basically is emotional in its appeal to the prospective donor. I mean, it's easy to get emotional about the fact that we just lost the roof and, you know, we can't have school tomorrow morning until we get it fixed. And everybody says, well, we can't let that happen, and so we're going to get involved. And so that's a form of developmental activity. And then there are programs. We have in our practice, especially outside of the church, but we do it also in the church, but outside the church, you know, a lot of organizations like those that we serve have a variety of programs. We call them an annual fund, for example. If you graduated from any major college or university in the world, the realities are you probably get an invitation every fall to participate in the annual fund. It's the goal that they have to raise a certain amount of money to do things that otherwise would not be able to be accomplished. And so those would be called a program. You have a major donor program, for example. People who give, you know, much more money, but yet have a deep interest in what it is that you're doing, and you invite them to become a partner with you by participating in a program. There are other ways in which we can engage people that don't necessarily generate money. We have senior auxiliaries with a lot of our clients where it's the retirees that make up the generations that we talked about earlier today, the builders and the boomers. They've got a lot of time on their hands, and they've got a lot of experience, you know, upon which you can draw. And, you know, creating some kind of community like, you know, an auxiliary or whatever, you know, you can be a part of this senior group. That is something that people draw to. We all kind of draw to be a part of something. Activities is another form of thing that we do typically in organizations. There are things that you do every year, concerts, Easter services, Christmas holiday events and so forth, and those are events that you need to plan. It takes, you know, some activity on behalf of others to make sure that these are done and done exceptionally well. And so those would be called activities. And then events is the last one, and events are things that don't happen very often. But when we do, we celebrate them. And usually it's kind of noted anniversaries. For example, the 10th anniversary. Like in marriage, you know, the 25th, you got to get the silver anniversary, and that's pretty special. And you do a lot of things on that anniversary. And organizations do something similar. You know, the 50th anniversary. I heard last night that they were celebrating the 15th year of the forum. And that's an anniversary. We're mindful of the fact that God has done some things over the last 15 years. And the forum has been a very significant impact. I think personally that the forum is probably the most significant evangelical event to take place in Europe in the last 100 years. I mean, this is an extraordinary organization when you stop and think about it. So here's some other things. What I call the rule of slice and dice. Anyone can eat an elephant, but they only have to do it, or the only way they can do it, is one bite at a time. And in the world of organization, everything you do needs to be broken down to the lowest common denominator. In other words, big things need to be broken down into small things that people, a number of people, can possibly do in order to get things done. So we need to hurry on here. So let's move forward and talk about making a list of the things you want to do. And take one of those events And then the planning process. And this is the, if we were sitting in a group and I'd say, okay, take an event that you are going to be planning in the context of your organization this year. Okay. Then begin the process of planning. And that begins by vision. What would the ideal outcome look like? So if you're going to have a concert, a Christmas concert, or if you're going to do something around the holidays of Easter or Thanksgiving or something of that nature, or if you're going to do even a project like we talked about with the roof that basically needed to be repaired, but what would the ideal outcome look like? And then what needs to be done in order for that to be successful? If this event or activity is to be successful, what will need to happen? And then make a list of all the things that need to be done if this project is to be completed successfully, and then break it down. While your list may be a long one, break it down into 4 to 6 key areas, and what goes into a planning a special dinner party, say, for example, for friends. So what we did was come up with planning a dinner party. This is one of the things. You could do anything, and this was a pretty easy one to do. And so let me show you how this organization took place. You know, there are a lot of things that you needed to deal with when you're getting to do something like that. You have to have, what are you going to have for dinner? What do you need? Food, grocery, shopping, things like that. An invitation list. Extend the invitations to people. You need somebody to prepare the meal. You need somebody to prepare the table setting or the place setting. You want to welcome guests when they come. You might want to preserve or produce or make available hors d'oeuvres. You might want to create table conversation around the table so that basically you're dealing with the topic that you're seeking to talk about. So you want to get people engaged in the conversation. And that's something that probably won't happen unless you plan it, which is always the case. You know, things don't happen unless they're planned. And so you really want to take into consideration everything that, you know, might need to happen in order for this event to be successful. You're going to have a meal, you're going to have hors d'oeuvres, you're going to have a dessert, and maybe leave with some kind of a memorable reminder that lets them remember the significance of the event and that they were a part of that. But you got to clean up, you got to take the chairs and put them back and make sure that everything's back in place after it's all done, you go to bed. Okay, so that's a very, very general observation of, you know, what it is that would need to take place if you're going to have a successful dinner party. Now, getting help, the realities are you could do that all yourself. And a lot of people will do that. They'll work themselves to a frenzy. They'll get real frustrated because it's not exactly the way they want it to be, but they won't accept help in whatsoever. And they're not really helping themselves, nor are they helping the organization. But what could be done to have a successful dinner party? Well, we created a little story here that, you know, you, let's say the person that you're the person, and this in this case we used her name Audrey. Audrey is going to kind of coordinate this whole thing, and she's going to create the menu, the agenda, and the place settings because it's going to be at her house. Now, Annie's a good friend of hers, and Annie's going to take charge of creating the guest list and sending the invitations. So Annie's going to have a job, and then Sally's going to come in. She's going to take charge of the grocery list and getting all the groceries. And then there's a chef, a good friend of theirs that's part of the church, and we call him Chef Bill, and he's going to prepare the main course and the dessert. And Joyce is going to provide and prepare the hors d'oeuvres and other things. And then Angie's going to coordinate the cleanup. So you have a number of people that are doing a little bit. Nobody's working too hard on this. And you can tell people this is going to happen on a certain date. These are the things that you're going to need to do, and give them an estimated time. You know, this is what I think it's going to demand of you in terms of your time. And so they all know that. And so if you want to put it into some kind of an organizational chart, that's what it's looked like. You have Audrey and Annie and Sally and Chef Bill and Joyce. And what Annie does is she picks those people because she's worked with those people before. She knows that Audrey is going to be good at doing what it is they were asking Audrey to do, and she knows that Annie is really good at getting people together. Sally, she's a great gal, and we know that she's pretty capable of doing what it is we're asking her to do, and Chef Bill has done this for 3 or 4 other events in the church, and so has Joyce. And so they basically were selected by Annie, okay? And that's all that Annie, you know, does, is she does, you know, and tells them and shares with them what it is that she wants to see accomplished and gives them the freedom to be able to pick other people to help them. So, for example, with Audrey, she needs to deal with the menu. She's got to deal with the program and the place setting. She might find 3 of her friends that would come along and say, okay, we'll do that. And so everybody's doing, but you notice that when you plan an event like this, you always work down from the top down, not the bottom up. You don't ask for volunteers. I mean, you invite in volunteers based upon what you believe they can bring to the table. What we will do on a larger scale with our clients is we'll have literally 8 or 10 of these organizational charts that would cover the 8 or 10 major initiatives that you want to accomplish within the context of your organization this particular year. And when that comes together, that can be very, very successful. And the plan always starts from the top down. Annie selects the people she knows and invites them to participate with her in planning an event. And Annie shares with everyone her vision for success. And Audrey, Annie, Sally, Chef Bill, and Joyce recruit help. And in this illustration, there are 16 different people involved. So you've got 16 people working together. And that is better than one person doing all of everything. And when we do the organizational charts, we do them for entire years and some of them end up being quite complex, but we'll use it larger level for an entire year. Here's what it is that we need to get done. And oftentimes we'll have 80 to 100 volunteers working, and nobody's doing much, but everybody's doing something. And as they do something, they take a little bit of ownership of your organization, and that's what you want them to do. You want them to be involved and engaged, because involved and engaged people support organizations like that, which we're talking about. Okay, so we're going to end on that note. But do something small, maybe in somebody's home, and get 3 or 4 people involved, and get them excited about, we just want to do this. And typically there's an agenda, there's something that you really want to accomplish, so that's the vision part of it. What do we want to accomplish, and what would it look like if we were successful? And if you answer that question before you do something, then it's going to be more likely successful than it will be afterwards. After you're done, you're sitting home with your wife and some of the friends that were involved, and they're saying something like, well, we could have done this. Well, we could have done this, or we should have done this. We should have thought of this. It's easier, to assess the success or lack of success in a project by looking through the rearview mirror than it is the front windshield, because we don't see it all as clearly as we see it in the background, that we could have done that and so forth. But the more you do these things, the more successful, everything that you do is going to be done, or is going to impact the organization's growth.